Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan, sitting in for Ann this week. She's on vacation. Metro home prices are at an all-time high. That's according to a report from the National Association of Realtors. While prices might be high, the supply of homes is low. The real estate market is competitive, but for millennials, often strapped with student loan debt and low-paying jobs, buying a home might be too hard. Here to give us an overview of the market is Jessica Lotz. She's the Director of Demographics and Behavioral Insights at the National Association of Realtors. She joins us by phone. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I'd also like to hear from our listeners, especially if you've been having trouble entering the real estate market or if you're a baby boomer looking to downsize. Let us know and give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jessica, let's start with an overview nationwide. What does the real estate market look like today?
It's incredibly tight, especially for those entry-level homes or for, as you said, baby boomers who may want to downsize. Smaller properties, more affordable properties are very difficult to get into today. Home building has been very tight in that market. They've been focusing on the higher-end market as home builders. So the inventory is extremely difficult. So prices have just been rising at that entry level.
So you basically have two groups looking to downsize, or at least to those affordable homes. You have boomers and you have millennials.
Right. And so what we see is we do know that millennials are the largest generation of home buyers. So I just want to say that because that's the myth out there that they're not buying. But they're the largest generation overall. So they're the largest generation doing anything today. Wearing a blue shirt, for instance, they would be the largest generation doing it just because there's more of them out there. We do know that it's very difficult to get into those starter homes. So what we see is millennials are actually pushed to the suburbs, they're pushed to small towns where there is inventory affordable for them to get into.
So obviously they want to get into the market. They're just moving to where they can get into the market.
Absolutely. See those more affordable suburbs, maybe a longer commute, still good schools, because many of them do actually have children in their home, topping out at an age of 37 right now.
You wrote something cute in the Huffington Post article, said, contrary to popular opinion, millennials are not buying avocado toast instead of saving for a down payment. Well, if it isn't this delicious breakfast option, you know, that's impacting their bank accounts, what is keeping these young people from taking that big financial plunge?
Right. It's not avocado toast, likely making it at home for themselves. But what we do see is that student loan debt is a big hurdle. So I can't understate the importance of student loan debt. They're the most educated generation. They've gone to college at higher rates, but then college costs have gone up at the same time. So we do see that they're saddled with debt. Their parents weren't able to help them during the recession with student loans. So they took on that debt themselves. We do see, though, for Gen Xers and Boomers, many of them did take on PLUS loans just because they didn't have cash available for them to help pay for their children's education. So we do see that that's a huge hurdle, especially just exiting college. They really do need to pay down that debt, get their debt-to-income ratio in check, and then save for a down payment all at once, and that's really hard.
The Trump administration taking a different approach to student loan debt than previous administrations, making moves that some critics say could make the student debt crisis worse. Can some of these federal moves with student loans really impact the real estate market? Because is it really student loans that is holding people back?
It really is student loans that are holding them back. I've done quite a bit of research on this, and NAR was actually on the forefront of really looking at the intersection between homeownership and student loan debt. We actually jumped into this research about 5 or 6 years ago because we started hearing from our members that not only their children wouldn't be able to buy homes because their median age is in their 50s, but they also saw that clients, even 5 or 6 years ago, were starting to see these headwinds. So we looked at the delay, we looked at the amount of debt. Both of those factors have increased over the number of years. But then I've also done some price analysis as well and working on my doctorate. So I've really taken a deep dive into this. And we can actually see a 14% price difference between those who have student loan debt and those who don't, which could really just mean the decision just not to enter the market because 14% is a huge difference in price.
That is. I'd like to hear from somebody in our audience if they are not buying a home because of student debt. Our number is 614-292-8513. How much is this millennial generation relying on mom and dad for housing money? And I mean either rental payments or down payments for a home. But you mentioned earlier, too, that, you know, mom and dads can't always help. So where are we in this? What do you see?
Oh my gosh, this is such a complicated issue because what we see is that millennials, if they are successful home buyers in the market, about a third of them received parental help for their down payment. That's a growing share over the years. So we do see that they really are relying on mom and dad to get them into that home. What we also see is that millennials, but then also Gen Zers, are living with younger boomers at really high rates. So when younger boomers go to purchase a home, one in five of them purchase a multi-generational home for their adult children, for their aging parents, often for children under the age of 18 to live in that home as well. And that has some implications for the type of house they buy, but also their ability to retire because they're supporting so many home, so many people in that house.
Is this a newer trend?
You know, it's a trend that's reverting back to older days.
Interesting.
It was really common. Yeah, and it's more common among different demographics. We absolutely see it higher among minorities. So different sections of the country see it at different rates. But we thought maybe it was just selected to younger boomers who had this trend. But actually, this last year, we saw a rise in Gen Xers who are now hitting their 50s. So we do see that that is rising among them as well.
And is there are we seeing one or more or both equally, millennials staying at home longer because they can't afford rent or to buy, or, you know, boomers having their parents move in with them because they can't afford a home or because they're aging and sickly and things like that?
It's actually both at the same rate. So we see both of those, which really does make both the younger boomers and now Gen Xers, that sandwich generation taking care of everyone, which if they want to go towards retirement, that's going to be pretty difficult as they're supplying all that food, utility costs for everyone in that house, and probably buying a bigger home to accommodate everyone as well.
And then how does that affect the housing market?
It has a big impact because what we see is that our boomers, there's less inventory available for that downsizing property, for that lower, more affordable property with lower square footage. But what we actually see is that they're doing a trade to a home that is very similar to what they moved from. So just trading a property from 1900 to 1900 square feet. So no difference, really. And that's impacting because we would like to see millennials and Gen Xers move up into properties that would fit their family appropriately as they do have children and their family grows. So that's a changing demographic that we're seeing is people staying in the same size of home.
The question is, too, though, do a lot of millennials really want a home anymore? Do they want that white picket fence, or have they just come to that?
Do.
You know, they do. I mean, because I'm a parent to some millennials, and some say, well, they just are kind of putting off some of this stuff a little longer.
Mm-hmm. And we see that as well. So we see marriage rates have dropped in the country. Having children to a married couple has dropped. 40% of babies are born outside of a married couple. But what we see, though, is that they want homeownership. And it's not just me at NAR saying that. There's plenty of studies out there from Fannie Mae, from the Demand Institute, from Pew, saying that they do want homeownership. It's just hard to get in there. And even if older generations who aren't homeowners right now, they see that as part of their American dream. It's just hard to obtain right now, given their financial situation.
You mentioned earlier that builders are still building large homes. Why mm-hmm. is that if there is such a small number of people who want or can afford those homes anymore?
Absolutely. We see that builders are doing that because it's expensive to build homes today. They're facing regulations in local communities where they don't want multi-home structures. So they don't want the large apartment buildings or large condos. They'd rather have the single-family homes within that community. We see that land prices are extremely difficult to get in, expensive. So when they do build that property, they want to have profit there, as well as labor costs right now, lumber costs, and steel. So very difficult to build that property, make a profit on it, so it makes more sense for them. So they tell us and they tell the media that they would prefer to build a bigger home.
Do you see that trend changing at all, knowing they have a hard time selling these, or resale too?
Right. So there is a select demographic who is able to purchase those homes. As far as resale goes, we do see that people are staying in homes longer, so it may not be an immediate concern for them.
And what are boomers wanting? Everybody wants to downsize now. So what's the move there for the boomer?
Right. So we just don't see that downsizing as much of a trend as we used to in the 90s. In the 90s, we would see people downsize by 400 or 500 square feet. Today, we see them trading to a similar size property. As far as younger boomers go, they're still active in the workforce. So we do separate out that data because it's a different demographic for someone in their mid-50s to someone hitting their 70s. Older boomers want to be close to friends and family. While they may want to downsize, we don't see that a huge trend. They still want to have a property where they can really have holidays, have families over. So that's an interesting change as well. Something that I think is really interesting where we see older boomers, the silent generation, and millennials being the same is that they want to all purchase a property that's close to friends and family. And that's a huge difference. When we think about our Gen Xers and boomers, I don't think that was an immediate neighborhood want of being close to friends and family. We certainly don't see it in the data, at least.
And you see that from millennials, too?
We do. We actually see that 43% of millennials, when they look at their neighborhood choice, they want to be close to friends and family. So that's a really big difference. I certainly don't see it in the data for Gen Xers.
Here, I thought my kids wanted to get away from me. I mean,
right. Right. Absolutely.
Nationwide, on the East and West Coast, it is astronomical, the amount of money they are asking for small homes. Is this going to change at all? Or is this one of those things that it's just, it is what it is because of where they are? And it's not going to change?
I don't see it changing. What I do see changing is that we may see generations who are looking for affordability, looking for stability in a home purchase, and the societal benefits that go along with that, they may move to a different area. But what we see right now is that people are attracted to cities where there's job growth, which makes a lot of sense. You want to go where the jobs are. And those cities are really pushing up housing costs, both for renters and for homeowners.
What are the most expensive housing markets today?
The California cities, the big ones, San Francisco, San Diego, absolutely expensive. But we see huge population growth in Seattle and Portland along the West Coast. And then the big ones in the East Coast area, of course, New York, Boston, D.C., all of them very sticky areas, lots of jobs available, but very expensive to live there.
And so at this point, the millennials that move there for jobs are living renting. And even the rent, though, is high. So if that seems to be another problem for millennials. You pay this high rent, then you cannot save for a down payment.
Right. It becomes very difficult. And one of the trends that we saw is that among millennial home buyers, we've actually seen the largest share of them moving directly from their parents' home into homeownership. So that's a great way. If your parents live close, if you wanted to live close to your parents, why not move in with them? You can pay down your student loan debt, get your debt-to-income ratio in check, improve your credit score, and also be able to navigate a housing market where you may need to put down a couple offers on homes before that that contract is accepted.
Because the worst thing for a millennial, or really anyone to do, is to buy a home and get in over their head.
Absolutely. You want to make sure that you do have that cash flow available. Because not only if something doesn't break, you're going to want to make that home your own. You're going to want to fix it up. That's really one of the attractors to homeownership for millennials and any generation. You want to feel like it's yours. So whether you're painting your living room burnt orange or lime green, that's your house and that's what you wanted to do.
So apparently living at home with your parents, it doesn't have the stigma it used to have.
It certainly doesn't. We absolutely see generations doubling up, tripling up. Among the generations, there seems to be less of a stigma, and it seems to be quite acceptable among the generations.
Jessica, thanks so much. Love all the research you've done. Very interesting.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
This is Jessica Louts, Director of Demographics and Behavioral Insights at the National Association of Realtors. We're going to take a break. When we come back, listeners, love to hear from you about what your home ownership sites look like. Give us a call at 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsigns@wosu.org. We'll be back, and you're listening to All Signs with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome to All Signs with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan sitting in for Ann this week. She's on vacation. 32 is the median age of home buyers, and that means, yes, they are millennials. These young people are navigating a complicated real estate market. There aren't enough houses, and the prices are high. Also, where millennials want to live might not be where they can find houses. And even if they want to invest in real estate, they simply might not have the funds because of things like student loan debt. We have Robert Vogt with us. He is a real estate analyst based here in Columbus. Welcome to the studio, Rob.
Thank you, Gail.
We also have Emmy Adachi. She's with us by phone, and she's a senior vice president at Heitman, a global real estate firm. Emmy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And I'd love to hear some from millennials who are trying to get into the real estate market. So hopefully they can give us a call at 614-292-8513. Emmy, I'll start with you. Tracking demographics, and we're talking millennials, when it comes to real estate investment, does this age group even have a strategy, or are they just trying to live paycheck to paycheck?
Yes, many of them certainly are. I think when we look at this age group and think about their the behavioral patterns we're seeing, often the mistake is to attribute too much of it to their preference or to the choices they're making and not realize that a lot of that is just driven by, you know, what they can manage to afford. You know, they want to live in certain cities, but most of those cities tend to be extremely expensive. So, again, you hear a lot about this narrative of, you know, younger people flocking to urban areas. And that's certainly been true to a certain extent in many markets. But again, you find as millennials start to get a little bit older, they don't want to have roommates anymore. They want to think about having kids and buying homes. Those places really just aren't viable for them to stay in. So they're likely to look elsewhere and look out to suburban locations or lower cost non-gateway markets.
Do you see that the same thing here, Rob, with folks starting maybe urban and then wanting to move to that house?
No question about it, Gail. It absolutely reflects the national trends that exist. And, you know, I think as she was describing that we've had an awful lot of millennials who have made the decisions to move into downtown and the near neighborhoods. And now they're trying to think about where do I want to live after this, after I have make some long-term lifestyle decisions, when I get married, when I decide to have kids, where am I going to live? And I think that's the biggest problem right now is we simply don't have the products in areas where millennials want to live. And I think when you were talking about it at the introduction, that's absolutely correct. We just don't have the product existing for them to move into.
So, Emmy, how are we going to get the product? How do we start this ball rolling, Emmy?
Well, we have been looking at these trends for some time, and I believe, you know, many of our peers on the institutional capital side are starting to recognize this trend. So much capital flocked to downtown areas to build very high-end apartment buildings. And then we've realized, however, that you do have all of these millennials who are starting to get older. The oldest ones are in their mid-30s, and, you know, many of them are not going to be able to buy a home, you know, within the next few years, but they still want to start families. So one of the things that we've been looking at doing is finding areas in the suburbs, you know, that have good school districts where we can either buy or build new residential for-rent product that can accommodate families. So they're townhome style or they're larger unit sizes. And again, they've got good access to schools and to transportation for commuters.
And Rob, do you see any way that we can get out of this? It's a spinning wheel, you know.
Gail, we will get out of this. I mean, you have to give credit to developers when they begin to recognize where the demand for certain housing is. And I think we're going to figure out how to make housing work in the suburbs. One of the problems is that everyone wants now walkable neighborhoods. And when we were developing neighborhoods back in the 70s and 80s, when you and I were growing up, you know, it was putting in a cul-de-sac with 15 houses that looked identical to each other. And, you know, today millennials are looking for something much more than just that. You know, when you drive down the street, you got to figure out what house you live in based upon the color of your garage door. They want unique experience. And part of that is creating these walkable neighborhoods. So I think what we're going to see in time is the development of these mixed-use developments that aren't just residential, that they have a combination of different uses associated with it, and millennials begin to recognize that. What you talked about earlier, though, is a real issue, is how do we do it affordably? And I think this is going to be the challenge that developers have, is how do you put in the residential and mix it with the commercial uses, the walkable neighborhoods, and things like that. So a lot of this has to go back to the officials, the folks that make up the zoning laws and allow the type of housing that goes into these neighborhoods. And we're going to have to loosen up those requirements that you can't require three lots to an acre. It's got to be a higher density than that in order to make it more affordable. And frankly, a lot of millennials are looking for a higher density, which is one of the reasons they were so attracted to these urban neighborhoods.
Oh, Emmy, these low residential home buying rates, they're impacting commercial real estate. Mm-hmm. Where's this business going? Do they just follow the high rises?
We've seen tremendous demand for multifamily over several years, and we actually see the demographics in terms of, you know, the younger millennials and Gen Z coming behind them continuing to support apartment demand broadly. So as I said, though, there has been kind of a glut of these very, very high-end projects built, you know, in downtown areas, and we found that actually we don't have that many millennial renters in them, fewer than we had expected, because many of them, you know, simply can't afford to live there. So again, you're coming back to this question of affordability, and when we look at the data, we find that there actually aren't that many millennial households being formed in these urban neighborhoods, and if they are, they are among the top earners within their cohort.
So, Rob, here in Columbus, are we seeing the same thing? And I've seen millennials like the idea of renting. Maybe they want to stay renters.
And I think that's true. I think it's a combination of factors, Gail. And I think we can't apply a broad brush to all of these millennials. I mean, there are various segments of them that want certain types of housing. As a comment regarding Columbus, we haven't had the glut yet of apartments in our downtown and near neighborhoods.
Because they keep building.
They keep building, but they keep renting them. So, you know, that keeps developers looking for more and more sites. So we haven't seen that yet here in Columbus. It may happen the next couple of years if we continue to build at the pace we're building, but we have not yet seen that. I would also agree that what's appealing about apartments that's appealing to millennials in the downtown walkable urban environment is the same thing that empty nesters like. The fact that you can walk out your door, go to a restaurant, go to a show, go to a sporting event. You know, when you got to drive in from Powell or Dublin to go to a baseball game, that's not a lot of fun. But when you can walk outside your door and go down to watch the Clippers in the evening, you know, that's very appealing to a lot of folks. So what I have been advocating is that even if we end up building a lot of apartments downtown and we lose some millennials to home ownership, it's going to be replaced by the empty nesters. So I'm at least excited about the fact that we won't have too much of a glut here in Central Ohio.
Last year, about 32% of young people were homeowners, and that's 10% behind home ownership in 2005. That's a lot. It's the economy. It's growing. Why isn't it helping these young people? Why can't they get into homes? What are some of the factors, Rob?
Boy, again, it's a loaded question, and you can't put one.
I'm sure there's several factors.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors that go to it. Lifestyle, I think, is one of the biggest ones. The fact that there are one or two people now that are living in a household and you don't have a family of four, they don't need a house at this point, is clearly one of them. You talked earlier about the student debt and not being able to finance to buy a home like that. And I think, you know, as we talked about, one of the most important things is that the homes aren't in the places that folks want to live anymore on the entry level side. And, you know, when you consider here in Central Ohio that the lowest new price home is around $250,000 to $280,000, there's not a lot of folks that can buy that. And then when you combine that with the fact of what school districts are these things in, it just is a snowball effect where the millennial says, the heck with it. I'm going to stay downtown in my apartment and pay my $1,500 a month.
Ooh. Emmy, the trend is that young people might be just waiting longer for their life experiences besides buying a home, that things like marriage, having children, buying a house. Is that also part of the issue here?
Yes, it definitely is. Millennials are moving through life stages differently, doing things in, you know, a different order, you know, maybe never hitting some of those milestones at all. We do know from all kinds of survey data that millennials, most of them eventually do want to own that home. But, you know, as you've pointed out, things like student debt, you know, kind of stagnant wages, you know, have impacted that, along with the scarcity of starter homes. You've also had such a shift on the capital side, away from building, you know, multifamily for sale products, so condominiums, you know, this cycle, it's all been about the multifamily for rent product. So again, that takes away kind of an inventory of affordable first homes that they could be buying.
I don't know if you know much about this, Emmy, but I'm going to pose the question anyway about affordable housing in Ohio as compared to the East and West Coast. In Ohio, we still say we have affordable housing, and yes, some of these young people can afford it, and boomers as well. On the West and East Coast, are their salaries keeping up with this high rate of real estate, or are some people just never going to be able to buy a home, even if they have a good paying job?
Absolutely. You see people with great jobs, and yet the average home price is, seven or ten times, what they make. So at some point, some of them just feel, hopeless about ever being able to own a home. And then in the meantime, they're renting nice apartments in these cities, but that makes it even harder to save up for that down payment.
Mm-hmm. Rob, what does Ohio look like? How attractive to people, especially when they come from Boston or L.A.?
It's very attractive. There's a lot of house that you can buy. There was a recent study that was in CityLab just recently that was issued that was looking at some of the migration trends impacting Ohio. And although this is a little bit off topic, they were talking about the fact that most of our migration has been from other areas of Ohio, and we're not yet getting the full impact of folks moving from the coast. Anyone you talk to who have gone into central Ohio has come from the coast say they just love the area and the fact that they can buy three or four times the house that they had in other areas. But I think it's perceived very strongly here in central Ohio as a desirable place to live.
Emmy, what does it look like as far as parental help for some of these millennials? You mentioned not being able to save for a down payment. Is that happening, that parents are stepping in? And if they are, is it a gift or a loan?
Yeah, it's a pretty significant part of many of these millennials being able to buy something is getting help from their parents. And I'd say it's kind of a mixture of the two, but often I think it's more of a gift. If you look at how the different generations have fared economically in their working lives, the baby boomers had it really great compared to Gen X, and then the millennials. So there's a lot of wealth there in the boomer generation that's going to be passed down, to a lot of their millennial children. And so many of them are already helping them out by giving them those down payments, because otherwise they really, it might take them 10 years to save up for that in some of these coastal markets.
Absolutely, Gail. And one of the things, again, I wanted to bring up that I think is really interesting in central Ohio is the fact that millennials now are branching out into lower-end neighborhoods that they haven't looked at previously. And the fact that, they may not have a down payment for a big house in Powell or Westerville, but they are starting to go into these fringe neighborhoods that 6 or 7 years ago, nobody would have ever considered buying into.
We're talking Italian Village or Franklinton or
I'm talking about places like Marion Village, the South Side over by Children's Hospital, the Hilltop, Westgate. These are neighborhoods that we didn't take a close look at. But now that millennials are recognizing, hey, for the kind of money I have to spend in the suburbs, I would much prefer to take the risk that I'm going to have in some of these areas. Milo Grogan, another great example where we're beginning to see an awful lot of activity. For millennials, buying a house for $60,000 or $70,000, putting $50,000 into it, and ending up with a house that appraises for $180,000 or $190,000.
You don't see them staying there. You see them as first-time home buyers.
House. Right. They're willing to take the risk to get into a house, and I think it just emphasizes the importance of wanting to be homeowners at some point. On the other hand, I think there's also a lot of attraction to the fact that they're so close to downtown, they're close to places like the Short North and German Village, that they're willing to take the risk. And frankly, I think that's a huge bonus to central Ohio to know that we're now getting into some of these neighborhoods that we haven't traditionally looked at as a place to live long term.
And I would say that you're correct in the fact that they're coming around also because business has invested in these neighborhoods, making them safer, appear to be cleaner, up to date, whereas they weren't looking there 10 years
ago. That's right. That's exactly right. And those are all things that these millennials will begin to weigh when they consider where they're going to live. But it is so refreshing to see us begin to venture into these neighborhoods and see the kind of investment that a lot of millennials are making into them.
Long term, though, if there's schools that they don't necessarily want, and I always think that people talk about that
right.
a lot.
Right, and that weighs heavily on their decisions on where they're going to live. But I think we're beginning also to see these households or millennials making other decisions on how they're going to educate their children, or if are they even going to have children. There's a lot of private schools out there, the Catholic schools, the Montessori schools. There's a lot of options out there, and a lot of these folks are beginning to take that kind of chance and educate their kids a little bit differently.
We're going to take a phone call now. Jerry from Columbus. Jerry, your comment or question, please.
Yes. Thank you for taking the call. I'm almost 90, but when I worked for a company, they had profit sharing. They took 5% of your payout if you wanted it, and I did want it because then at the end of the year, if they made whatever profit they made, they threw that into the 5% that you had deducted. And right now, I'm almost 90, but if I hadn't had profit sharing, I'd be in the poorhouse. And why don't more companies have profit sharing? I'd like an answer to that, please.
Yeah. Thank you, Jerry. I'm not sure we can have an answer on why companies are doing profit sharing, but he has a point. Could save then.
He does. And he points out the fact that our current economy has been replaced with a lot of lower end paying jobs, the Walmart, the Targets, the distribution centers. And, you know, they simply don't have the resources to be able to pay folks like that. You know, 35 or 40 years ago when we had all these manufacturing jobs in steel production and auto production and so on, they were some great benefits. But today's jobs simply don't have that. And it, you know, at whose fault is it? I'm not sure, but that doesn't exist in today's economy.
And, Emmy, that does hurt these young people. So I guess the question is, going forward for young people, is because the economy is changing, because outlooks of payment employers are paying to employees, what does this do for the housing market in the future? Is it one of those things where you just take it a year at a time, 5 years at a time, see what happens?
Yes. I mean, unfortunately, if you look forward long term, we can see this continued bifurcation between the haves and the have-nots, right? So as we talked about, the millennial cohort is huge. It's over 80 million people. And so, you've got some very highly sought-after, high-skilled workers. But then you also have a lot of people, again, sort of burdened with too much student debt, that maybe they don't have great wage growth prospects. As you guys talked about, there's sort of a perception of millennials that they're not loyal, right, to any companies, but it's also because a lot of companies aren't loyal to millennials back, right? They don't necessarily see the same kind of career path open to them that was open to their parents, for instance, where they could stay with a company for a long time and grow with them and build their wealth. So millennials are really going to have to kind of take their own path and figure it out themselves.
What, and hopefully they will be able to do that. Emmy Adachi-Fox, thank you so much for being with me this morning. Emmy's a senior vice president at Heitman. We appreciate that. And we're going to take a break. And listeners, you can join the conversation. Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're going to say goodbye to Emmy. Rob's going to continue with us, and we'll be right back. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan, sitting in for Ann this week. She's on vacation. We're talking home values, especially it has to do with boomers and millennials. The median home value in Columbus is about $150,000. That means these home values are growing and will continue to do so, according to real estate website Zillow. While this may be great for sellers, the people trying to get into the market, particularly young people, millennials, are entering a highly competitive and sometimes unaffordable marketplace. We still have Rob Vogt with us. He's a real estate analyst here in Columbus. Rob, glad you could stick with us.
Thank you.
And also we have Todd Helpringer. He's the president of Helpringer Mortgage Services. Todd, nice to have your perspective.
Great. Thank you.
Excuse me. Listeners, how has the real estate market in Central Ohio been treating you? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Rob, I'm going to start with something that you touched on last time in the last segment. And you were saying that we are building more high-rise luxury apartments and condos because we still are filling them up. How long do you see that trend going here?
Well, a lot of it has to do with our economy. We've got the strongest economy in the Midwest right now. We're adding jobs at a pace of about 20,000 jobs a year. And when you think about those numbers of jobs, that we have to accommodate those folks. And a lot of those jobs that are being filled are from people from outside the area. They don't have any particular loyalty to one neighborhood at this point. So they say, hey, well, let's live downtown for a while and pay the kind of rent that they're asking for those. So, you know, the strong economy is certainly contributing to that. And it's hard to predict how the economy is going to turn out. But at this point, it looks very rosy, at least for Central Ohio right now.
And are you surprised at the number of people that are moving in downtown? I mean, it's a relatively new phenomenon.
Yeah, it is a little bit surprising.
For Columbus.
Yeah, it is. And going back to Mayor Coleman back in 2001 or two, when he made the initiative to create the housing environment downtown, was a big play there, where he was encouraging that kind of development. And that was kind of the start of it. And that has kind of continued as people have realized that they want to live in walkable neighborhoods. And I keep harping on walkable, but that is the reality that, so many times we see the millennials hanging out in a restaurant in the Short North on a Saturday afternoon. Do they really want to be the ones cutting their grass on a Saturday afternoon or cleaning out the gutters?
Right. Or anyone for that matter. I mean, let's
right.
Yeah.
No, that's right. But you know, us baby boomers, when we were growing up, that was the expectation that we would buy a house, right. We would cut the grass, we would clean out the garage, we would do all the things that go along with home maintenance. And I think that millennials are beginning to reject that kind of lifestyle. And that's why developers have to be really careful on how they build houses. They have to be maintenance-free. They've got to be on smaller lots. They've got to be well-detailed, open floor plans.
Well, I hope some builders are listening to you.
but what is interesting is that I'm making the same kinds of things that the baby boomers are looking for. Right. They want functional space. They want open floor plans.
Well, they're all fighting for the
same
thing right now.
Exactly.
And Todd, how do you see the market?
As you said earlier, that it's going to be a cycle, whereas downtown right now, it's all the baby boomers. And then if they want to become homeowners, then it will switch back to the empty nesters. We'll move back downtown and have that experience of the walkable community. So it is a cycle. And I think the more the condos is fine. I don't see there's an over amount of this right now.
Right.
I don't really see that yet.
Right.
We have a lot of calls, and I'm going to start with one. Alan in Columbus. Alan, your comment or question, please.
Yeah, I happen to be a realtor in Central Ohio. Two things that are affecting availability of, let's call it, first-time houses. One, there is probably one-fifth the amount of bank repos out there than there were 5 years ago.
Sure.
And there's a lot of competition between first-time buyers and investors paying cash on that. So that, gets rid of a property market for the millennials.
Interesting aspects. Okay.
Yeah, the second thing is interest rates. I was just talking to a gentleman this morning, and he decided not to move up because his interest rate was, 2 years ago, Todd will tell you, it was 3.5%. Now it's 5%. That's like a 30% increase in interest rate for somebody who's moving up. And there is just a mental block there saying, oh, maybe I'll stay where I am.
Mm-hmm.
And not being able to find those houses out there to move up, they're also saying, I'm going to stay where I am.
Yeah. Alan, thank you for that. And Todd, we're going to talk about that interest rate because it is creeping up.
Yeah, I think the second part of his thoughts were the most accurate. There's not that much product on the market right now. So that's one of the problems that we have, is that homes are getting bid up because there's very few on the market. So it might be a double-edged sword, where rates may be ticking up a little bit, but the gentleman that wanted to buy the next house couldn't find something that suited us because there's not that much out there right now. It's just kind of the nature of the beast right now.
It's still relatively low interest rates,
yes.
But we do see them creeping up. So there might be some people out there who weren't ready to take that plunge, but looking at the interest rates now, think, maybe I should.
They are still, in my opinion, fantastic. I mean, right now, the 30-year fix is at 4 5/8. It's a fantastic interest rate.
But it does make you wonder, Todd, why aren't we selling just a load of houses right now because interest rates were so low and we weren't. And
and
again, it gets back to the point, we didn't have the kind of product that millennials are looking for.
Adina, you are on the air and you are a millennial. And I think apparently you want to try to own a home and you're finding it not possible?
No, actually, I am a homeowner.
Good for you.
Yes, thank you. We went the route of buying a fixer-upper. We did get our money back, so we're very happy about that. As a millennial homeowner and a mortgage processor, I have a lot of insight to the market as well. I wanted to encourage millennials to get pre-approved and just see where they stand. I think the biggest hurdle for them is just being afraid of what they qualify for. But there are a lot of renovation options out there. There are a lot of great down payment assistant products that I would highly encourage millennials to look into if they don't feel that they have the 20% down, which is not necessary.
Right. So did you pick up the hammer yourself, Adina, or did you hire somebody? I'm just curious.
We picked up the hammer. Oh, for sure. Yes, I learned quite a bit. Yes.
Adina, thank you. Great advice. Yeah. And Adina's that is
got
interesting,
a good point.
Too. Yes.
I still can't believe people think that they need 20% down. I mean, I've been doing this for 29 years. And I don't remember the last time someone needed 20% down. So there's so many opportunities out there for first-time home buyers with as little as 3% down. So there's a bunch of opportunities. I was listening to the earlier time when you guys were talking that other means for them to have for down payment. You know, a lot of them say we can't save for the down payment. Well, a lot of times they're going to rely on the baby boomer parents because they've been very fortunate. So there's been a lot of gifting going on. But also a lot of the millennials are using 401ks. They're taking a loan against their 401k.
Which is not a good idea, really, right?
Well, I don't know.
That's me as a boomer talking. I'm retired.
Also, at that age, they have a long time of their life still ahead of them. If it gets them into their home, allows them to have a family, what's more important? Saving for the road down the way down the road, or just get some.
Or trying
right
to live right
yeah.
now. One more call. This is Christina. Christina, you've moved from Texas and apparently having some problems trying to find a place.
This is really interesting because I was out of the workplace for 8 years, part of which was taking care of my grandmother with Alzheimer's. I'm also an Army veteran, and I thought I would have a leg up. I inherited my grandmother's home and sold it, had some money on hand. I thought with a VA loan, I would be able to get into a home fairly easily. However, I'm finding that because of lack of work history, I'm not even being approved for an apartment, much less a home.
Wow.
So I've looked at options, for example. I'm interested in a condominium. Even though I'm 38, I feel like I fall into the millennial category in this circumstance simply because I'm having to face a lot of the same issues that they're having. I went to school late after my grandmother passed away. And so, you know, condominium, I have three kids, one of whom is 16. I have twin 8-year-old boys. You know, the demands in terms of, like, my daughter needs a car. She's going to need college expenses, graduation from high school. There's a lot of upcoming expenses that I'm going to have to face on top of trying to find some place to live. I looked at low-income housing, and that got waitlist for months or years.
That is a problem in our city, right? Well, Christine, let me get to that question because I want to ask Todd that. Thank you. You brought up some good points about a credit rating having to do with even being able to find rent. Well, some of these folks are just getting started. So how does that impact there?
Yeah, I mean, credit scores are going to be everything. I mean, credit scores are going to affect your mortgage interest rate. They're going to affect your home insurance, even if you have car loans. So again, paying your obligations on time, you know, even if you have this credit card obligation or student loan obligation, continue to pay those on time will help build your credit score. You know, back on her comment on work history, you know, I would tell her don't get discouraged. Maybe try another lender and find out what her circumstances are, because it sounds like she has money for a down payment. And she'll probably be still a first-time home buyer because I don't think she owned the home before. And, so she could do a 3% down product.
And Todd, could a lender work with that borrower to get their credit cleaned up?
Well, That's a great question. There is some rescoring that can go on. It depends upon what it is with the credit, what past dues, if any. If it's just that they've had a downturn where something foreclosed upon, et cetera, just time is about the only thing that will help is time.
And the pre-approved loans, Rob, you both nodded yes to that.
Absolutely.
That is really something that at this point is almost you have to do it, right?
You got to know your starting point.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think most realtors really feel before they put you in the car, I want you to know what you can afford. We do those all the time. And I especially like doing it with the first-time home buyers because they just have just a different glow in their eye of buying their first home. We've had a couple this week that just—
You mean that glow then turns to reality and then—
but they're excited about it, which makes us excited. It's a fun to see them want to buy their first property. And we had one yesterday that was, I think they would be considered millennials.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, Rob, we do, though, have houses in Columbus that are for sale in central Ohio. But there's over a certain threshold of cost, and that's really the problem.
Well, yeah, and where they're located. We still have a lot of affordable homes in neighborhoods that we would describe as transitional. And that's why I brought up the point earlier that we are finding and particularly among millennials who are willing to take a little risk to live in a neighborhood that may be considered transitional. They can put some sweat equity into it and end up with a house that could be quite valuable down the road. And, you know, we certainly saw that in East Franklinton, which where all the activity is. And I think that's beginning to move on to West Franklinton. We're seeing an awful lot of young folks that are moving into that area, taking on some of these houses that need a little bit of work. But I think they're going to end up with something valuable in the future.
But if these big houses aren't selling, well, when are we finally going to get that? You know, to home builders, and you brought that up, Rob, that these home builders, and it's got to be walkability.
Yeah.
Are there places to build where that will work here in Central Ohio?
Well, that's the problem. Well, that's keep going out further and further,
right?
Because it's so saturated.
And the problem, Gail, is that we've got, I think the city officials understand it, the elected officials understand it, but then they've got their constituents who are sitting back there saying, I don't want that high density housing in my backyard. And, yeah. and we got to get folks to get baby boomers to understand that it is a better lifestyle when you can encourage different types of households living together in the same place.
I agree.
We have one more caller that we have time to take. Doug, your caller question or your question or comment, please.
Hey, Gail, you're doing a great job filling in for Ann.
Oh, thanks.
So we just sold a house to a millennial couple. We'd lived in Old Oaks for 20 years. And what was interesting to me is everything had to be gray. And we had bought a house over in Berwick that had shag carpeting to take up and horrible wallpaper to peel off. We were willing to put in the time to take all of that down and be able to see past all of that. But it seemed like many of the millennials can't get past.
We're all laughing here because I think you've hit a really true point. Yes.
Yeah.
Doug, thank you. And I'm sure that shag carpet looked just great. Maybe you should have kept it. Thank you, Doug. Good luck on your new home.
But gray is that new shiny new object. You know, that's what they want, the millennials.
I think they're also used to renting in really nice places, maybe.
Right. So they want calling up somebody to take care of the broken toilet.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a mindset, you think, here that the millennials need to change as well as a little more money?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so, too. I mean, putting back, as you said earlier, when I grew up and had their first home, it was, you have to cut the grass. You have to do this. You have to do that. Again, a lot of people are away from doing that nowadays. They don't want that lifestyle anymore.
Which is why HGTV is so popular.
Exactly right.
Well, people do watch that and think that I'm going to do that to my house. Or I think that they show these folks that you can do it for a lot less than is reality,
which
is what some people think.
They do it in a half an hour, right? It's a half an hour.
Quick wrap up, the future of housing in Central Ohio.
Boy, that's a tough question. I think there's a lot of opportunities out there. You just have to dig down and look for them and be willing to accept maybe less than what you expected.
And I find that I think interest rates will remain low for an extended period of time. I don't see them going in the fives and sixes. It will murder.
You really don't?
I don't. It will murder this economy. It really will. It will stifle everything. And right now, I say until we get more homes on the market, it's already a little bit slow in regards to housing. Housing is a little bit slow right now.
I think in 86, when I bought my first home, rates were 15%, 16%. It was crazy.
Yeah. When we started the company in 82, it was, I think, 18%.
So I don't think people, when they say higher interest rates, maybe don't really realize what high interest rates
really mean. I've said before in previous shows, when a person comes in and says 4.5% was a high interest rate, I know exactly how old they are.
But the bottom line is, though, that – yeah, thanks for sharing that. The bottom line here, though, I think, Rob, is that we really have a pretty good market compared to some other places around the country.
No question about it. When you look at the price of housing here in Central Ohio –
still kind of a bargain.
That's right. Yeah. It still kind of is. But when you compare it to Cleveland and Cincinnati, we're doing a lot better.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place here.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with me. Todd Helpringer is the president of Helpringer Mortgage Services, and Rob Vogt is a real estate analyst based in Columbus. Thank you all.
Great. Thank you.
And that's it for me today and for this week. Thanks for listening all this week. I'm your host, Gail Hogan. I've been in for Ann all week. She'll be back on Monday. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.